All right. I always get a lot of people messaging me, asking me how I find the best deals for my flips and my long-term and short-term rentals. Well, I'm going to tell you how I do it. I direct source properties utilizing a company called PropStream. PropStream is an amazing, amazing platform. It allows the user to combine any number of criteria and extract a list of properties that meets an exact investment profile. They have nationwide coverage for all kinds of cool, you know, lists like pre-foreclosures, bank-owned properties, high equity, vacant properties, tax, IRS, utility liens, and so on and so forth. It is just such an incredible platform. I mean, you know, this is how I locate my on and off market properties. I generate lead lists. I vet my properties. I assess my risk, calculate feasibility, and so on. Like, if you guys aren't using PropStream, you really, really should. So go to https://trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. So basically, trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. And that's going to get you a 7-day free trial. Go ahead and sign up today. Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best.
All right, guys. I wanted to come back to you today because we have Mike Aiella in the house. He is the host of the Investing for Freedom podcast. And it's a newer podcast and it's hit some top charts, right? So look, guys, let's just welcome him today. He is going to teach us a little bit about syndication. But first, we're going to talk about who Mike is for a few minutes so that you can understand who he is, where he's come from before he teaches. So Mike, I wanted to welcome you to the show. Thank you so much.
Brandon, I appreciate you having me, man. I just love your energy and fire and the passion you bring to the world and happy to be here, man. So.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Yeah, same thing. I enjoy your podcast so much. If you guys have not listened to it, the Investing for Freedom podcast, it's really badass. I mean, I can tell you take a really calculated approach and you take this podcast seriously. It's not a hobby. This is something that you are truly passionate about, which is trying to help ordinary human beings become better at, and successful and so on and so forth. So let me ask you about your podcast. So what do you see the, actually, I was going to ask you behind the scenes, but I guess I'll just ask you now. Where do you see the future of your podcast? Like I really enjoy it. So I'm kind of curious where you're going with it.
You know, just that being completely honest, like I found myself so many times looking around the rooms that I was in and just seeing amazing people, mentors, friends, I've just been so fortunate to just be surrounded by amazing people. And then I find myself like, how do I share this? And part of that's the reason why the podcast is here, because I've met so many people and I'm able to bring them on and share their stories with the world. But then taking it a step further, I've also found myself individually spending a lot of time one-on-one with people, which I love doing and still want to continue to do. I'm not a coach. I don't have a coaching program, any of that. One of my first mentors, I'm a plumber by trade. A lot of people don't know that. But one of my first mentors always said to me that we owe it to the next generation to give back to them. Mm-hmm. And so he ingrained that in me from the time I started working for him when I was 15. He ingrained that in me from the time that I was 15. Mm-hmm. We always owe it to that next generation of, and that's not an age thing. That's the next generation in whatever your trade is, whatever your career is, if it's podcasting, sharing, you know, giving them the information. It's the go-giver concept. So
right.
It's twofold for me. I just love giving back. And this is the easiest way to collapse that time frame because you can only help so many people one-on-one when you're not a coach and you're not getting paid to do it. And so I just thought, man, why don't I couple all these amazing people that I know and then take the information that I love sharing and put that out there into a medium that more people can see it. Doesn't mean that I won't have one-on-one conversations, but we can reach more people this way. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're also the co-founder of Four Peaks Capital Partners. The asset class that you specialize in is mobile home investing. Before we go there, why don't you give us a little bit of a background of who you are, where you come from, and where you are today?
Yeah. So the background will kind of tie into how I got into where we're currently at. So we'll just bring it full circle. So sure. I just literally the week before last celebrated my 21st wedding anniversary. So I've been married for 20.
Congrats.
Thank you. Tomorrow is my first son's 20th birthday. So if you do the math backwards, Karen and I got married. I was 20. She was 19.
Wow. My wife and I was too. That's amazing, man. Yeah.
We got married May. And then the following May, our first kid showed up. And so we got married early. I was a plumber by trade. Through just take a real quick story on this. This is kind of how I got into the investing for freedom world. Two things happened to us. Number one, my oldest son, he had a condition, basically without getting technical, his esophagus tried to form twice in the womb and they found it in the womb. And we lived in this small town. And so the hospital was not very advanced. The medical care was not very advanced. And so we found ourselves as a 20-year-old and a 19-year-old having to drive to Salt Lake City, Utah and see a specialist once every 4 weeks. And then as it got closer, Kara ended up having to have our first kid in Salt Lake. And what I realized really quickly, if I wasn't working, I wasn't eating because I was paid by the hour and I was an employee. And I think even though we were having this conversation for years before this, and I literally had a video up, I don't know, probably 3 months ago. You know, the average American is one paycheck away from destruction. Just having these conversations about how we need to, if you're an employee or even if you own a business, you need to diversify because if you've only got one stream of income and that stream gets shut off, you're in trouble. So we were having this conversation before, but I think it's more relevant now than it probably ever has been. So I found myself in that situation as a 20-year-old and a 19-year-old, my wife and I, we're driving, we're traveling. If I don't work, I don't eat. And then literally when he was born, we were gone for like 2 weeks at a time. I don't know how we survived that, to be honest. And then, you know, you got these medical bills piling up, all this stuff happened. We got through that, made it through it. But that was like the first eye-opener to me that like, man, I really need to figure out. I didn't know what it was then, but this is kind of what took me on that journey. Like, how do I create other streams of income? How do I make sure that I've got enough? Because everybody's always like, you know, you need 3 months of expenses in the bank. You need 6 months. How do you do that? I mean, that most of the time people just tune that out because it's like, you hear that, but you don't know how to accomplish it. And that's what I love about the way you teach is because anybody can say, hey, you need 6 months of... Dave Ramsey says it all the time.
Right.
Oh, don't be in debt. Cut up your credit cards. Don't borrow any money to start a business. That's crap. Well, sorry, I'm not saying it's all crap, but the reality at the end of the day is like, I would love to go back and see Dave Ramsey 30 years ago because I know for a fact that he borrowed money to start his business. He borrowed money to, you know, build his buildings.
Yeah.
But yet these gurus want to teach you from a position of where they are today. They don't want to talk about the bruises and the battle scars and everything else that they got back then. They're trying to tell you to do something that they would do now today based on what they learned, but they forgot how they got there. And so that was step one for us. And then step number two, we had our second, it's interesting because my middle child, there was no like, there was no drama, there was no health issues. Mm-hmm. But then I always tell the story and it's my first kid and then my last kid and the middle kid gets left out is that everything just went perfect with him. So fast forward, my daughter's being born. I'm working for this company. I'm out of town and I'm literally working 90 hours a week and I miss my daughter's entire pregnancy, my third child. That's when Karen and I really realized that like, this is not the lifestyle that we signed up for. Karen and I always said that we wanted to make memories with our children and not focus so much on possessions. I want to be at every soccer game. I want to travel with my kids. I want to take them to Disneyland. I never wanted to be that person that was like, oh, we've got a Disneyland trip this weekend, but dad can't go. So mom's going to take the kids to Disneyland. Well, then I find myself out of town working 90 hours a week. We would literally leave Sunday evening. We'd drive home 8 o'clock at night, wash our clothes and leave the next morning at 3 a.m. and go back. And so that really took me to a point where that's what led us to start our first business. I left that company probably about 3 or 4 months after this realization and we started our first business. I'll tell the short story and then we can go wherever we want. So started that business. Some of it was luck. Some of it was just drive and motivation. Year over year, just double digit growth. Inc. 2009, fastest growing companies in America. We started in 2004.
Wow.
I started buying real estate along the way. And this is the reason why I was at a business planning event. And this guy that was leading us through this 3-day business planning, he said, If money and time wasn't an issue, what would you have? And this was the other statement that he made. If your business is not helping you achieve your personal goals, then you really just own a job. And so I found myself hearing that statement and I'm like rewinding back to, you know, where I was working 90 hours a week. I own a job. I'm a slave to that job. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with having a job as long as it's helping you achieve your personal goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not hating your life. You're not a tree. If you don't love where you're at, get up, move, make something happen. That's the difference between Brandon and everybody else that's listening. If you don't love your life and you don't love where you're at, get your ass up, move, and do something about it. And so we through that, they said in that business planning event, they said, if your job, if your business is not helping you achieve your personal goals, you really just don't have a job. And so my wife and I set a goal to buy 2 income producing properties a year for 10 years. That was like 2006. So we left, we bought 2 income producing single families that year. And then the next year, this mobile home park deal falls in my lap. We buy 72 spaces. And then that's when I realized that like, we went on and bought like 45 more single families and we bought commercial buildings and did some land investments. And the only thing I've never done is flip the house and I can't figure out why. I might have to do one.
Right.
I'm going to take your course.
Come on.
It's always scared me. Like I don't, not because it's a scary thing, but I just have never, I've never really thought about making that transition. So I need to learn something from you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of set us on that journey. And that's how I got to where I'm at today. I sold that business in 2014. And then we, through that process, after selling that business, I met my current partner and that's when we started syndicating and got to where we're at today.
Yeah. So it looks like in 2016, up until that point, after you met Andrew, your partner, tell me if I'm wrong, if I looked this up and I researched this wrong, but you guys were buying a couple of these trailer parks with your own money or private financing, and then something flipped the switch and you started syndicating deals around 2016. What made you flip that switch?
My wife and I owned 5 mobile home parks on our own before that. What really made me flip that switch? So 2 things happened, and it's weird how, you know, I'm a slow learner. I had a guy that was a client of mine at Plumbline, which was my first plumbing and heating company. He was one of my very first clients in 2004. Well, throughout the entire time that I worked in that business, he remained our client. He built a lot of retail space, did a lot of commercial buildings, and so we would always do his plumbing and heating. And I got to really know this guy. He became a mentor of mine. Although he was a client, he was a mentor. And he was constantly talking about syndication. I'm like, what the heck is syndication? And he basically explained to me, but I didn't get it, right? Like we all hear these terms. He just kept saying, you know, I go find a piece of land. I design the building. I put the financing together. And then I get investors in and we do this deal together. I'm like, okay, that sounds great. Never really thought much about it. After I had sold my business, I had told a buddy of mine, I'm like, I really want to look into this syndication. And your question is, you know, what got you into that going from buying them in your own? A lot of people are, you know, they're scared of partnerships. I've always had a partner. I had a partner in my first business. I have a partner now. And one of my mentors says, if both of you had the same skill set, one of you is not needed. So the key in partnership is to find people that you guys complement each other, right? Andrew's really good at marketing and sales and raising capital. And I'm really good at operations and running teams and the big picture vision of the company. And so we complement each other and I feel like we can get twice as much done. Well, it's the same thing with syndication. When I really started thinking about syndication, you can get 10 or 15 or 20 deals done in the same amount of time that you could do one. And yeah, you might only own 10 or 15 or 20% of that, but your economies of scale are so much more. You can get better financing. You can get, you know, you got more leads coming because brokers pay more attention to you. I'm sure you have real estate agents or brokers or however you source your deals are paying more attention to you now than they did when you first said, oh, I think I'm going to flip a house.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Same thing with vendors, right? Same thing with contractors. You know, if a contractor knows that you're going to give them 20 homes a year to do versus one, they're going to pay better attention to you. So there's economies of scale in anything you do, but that's really how I got interested in syndication. I had mentioned to a buddy that I wanted to know more about syndication because I didn't know how to do it. And he sent me this link to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Mm-hmm. And they had a syndication seminar coming up, which they still do twice a year. So if you're interested in syndication, you can reach out to Brandon or I and I can just, you know, point you in the right direction. But I went to this 2-day event. Basically, they had a bunch of people that had syndicated before. They had syndication attorneys. They had just a bunch of people teaching about syndication. And so I went there. That's where I met my partner. We teamed up and that's how we started buying mobile home parks.
Wow. So mobile home parks is your vehicle that has allowed you to invest so that you can be free. Play on your title here. Obviously, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this. But would you say that because you have the freedom, you can give more attention to your kids now? That you were talking about, that was the goal. I mean, that was the goal, so that you wouldn't have to travel, so you wouldn't have to work 24/7, fly out of town and do all the BS in life. I mean, obviously, they're your greatest accomplishment. Are you enjoying what mobile home investing has allowed you to have in your life?
Yes. The short answer to that is yes. But you know, backing up a little bit, whether you're doing a single family or you know whether you're syndicating, I think we're up to 35 communities now, plus the four that I still own, so we're 39 total.
Wow.
It's all about the team.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon, you and I have talked about this before too in some lengthy conversations. But it's all about the team. And I'm constantly challenging people's thought process on this because a lot of people don't start businesses because they think if you start a business, then you have to be a slave to that business.
Right.
But I'll tell you, that's a mindset problem because people are not as important as they think they are. I'm not as important as I think I am. One of my goals has always been, how do I become the dumbest guy in the room? And I say this often, I'm really not that smart. I just surround myself with people that are smarter than me. And whether that's in your own company as an employee or whether that's surrounding yourself with 1099 contractors and that kind of stuff, your goal should be freedom. And that's why I have the Investing for Freedom podcast, because in my mind, it's mindset. You can have one property, you can have zero properties and be more busy than somebody that has 300 properties.
Right.
And so, yeah, the short answer is yes, it has afforded me everything that I love and want out of life, but I had all that before. I always took vacations. I always kept my kids first. I never missed football games. I never missed soccer games. There's very, very few meetings that are pre-scheduled and then all of a sudden your daughter has a dance recital that you literally can't get out of.
Right.
We tell ourselves that lie because we think that we're the only one that can get things done.
So you make a choice. You make a choice to navigate the ship the direction you want it to go.
Yeah.
Oh, it's plain and simple as that. I mean,
well, and there's a 5-part question and process that I take people through, and you just said plain and simple, right? And it is simple. Yeah. It's not easy to implement because we don't know how to get out of our own way. But here's my 5-part question. What do you really want? Mm-hmm. Why do you want it? What are you going to do to get it? Measure results and adjust. Oh, Mike, that's so simple. Okay. That's simple in theory. But now get out of your own way. And once you decide what you really want and you say, this is what I'm going to do to get it, then hold yourself accountable to it. If you say you're not going to miss a soccer, how many times have we missed or been late for soccer games because you said, I'm obviously not talking to you, just in general, because we said, oh, you know, I was with this client and the meeting kept going. And in reality, you just didn't stop them from talking. Or number two, you just kept talking.
Mm-hmm.
Very seldom, if you've got your priorities straight, very seldom is there anything that can keep you away from what your true priority is. So I would argue for those of us out there that think we're the only ones that can do what we do, or, you know, the saying, I've found myself saying this before, well, I'm doing it for the kids.
Yeah.
And why I'm not there, it's for the kids. All those kids want is your time. And so just be real with yourself. No, work is more important to me. Money's more important to me. Just say it. Just say it.
Oh man, I love how blunt you are. And going back to that conversation where we had met, you were real blunt with me. And I just want to, we don't have to go over the conversation, but I do want to say that marked something in me. I'm like, gosh, man, nobody's ever like just called me out on my shit, but this guy did. So I respected you from day one for that. Like, you just tell people how it is, and that's what I love about you, because you're right. Because I read a book. It was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And it basically says, or the message is, basically, you are not as important as you make yourself out to be. And in the vast scheme of things, there's not much difference we can make in this world. I mean, some people, yes, Elon Musk or whoever, there's not a lot of difference we can make in this world. So just be happy and enjoy your family and friends. Like, and make sure you're there and you're being a positive influence. And that was the message of the book. But I think I lost a little bit of that along the way. And you said some words to me that I felt like really blessed me. So again, thank you for that. But yeah, dude, I think you're right. I think you are absolutely right. This is a life that we can choose and we can steer the ship where we want to go. So let me switch gears. There's two parts in this podcast, and I'm changing it up for all the listeners. This is the third time I've changed this podcast, where we're slowly evolving into a finite direction, obviously. But now I wanted to, the first part is finding out who the guest is, which now we know what you're all about. And then it is to do a teaching on what you are the expert on, which is mobile home investing. What's some things that we can talk about syndicating for? I mean, heck, I'll just be honest. I know basics, but I don't know how to break it down and how the flow of a syndication goes, especially for a mobile home park. But for those of us that may want to get into this business of mobile home park investing, how would you get in and what are the steps to get into that type of asset class?
If I could compartmentalize and then you lead me which way you want to go, because sure. I've often said, so number one, mobile home park investing is not anything that we get into, and I'm sure you would appreciate this. Have you met any of your competitors? I'm doing air quotations for anybody that's just listening to the audio. Have you met any of your competitors that are just like, I don't know, maybe they remodeled their single family house 20 years ago and now all of a sudden they think that, they're gonna flip homes and they're gonna take over the world, right?
Yeah. Okay. Every day.
So, yeah. I don't care. And obviously we all have to start somewhere. But here's the one thing that I would say about mobile home park investing. I didn't just go out and buy a mobile home with no experience. I had a couple rentals. I had a construction background, kind of knew what I was getting into. Do you need a construction background? No, just hire the contractors. I had a mentor that understood mobile home parks that kind of helped me through my first deal. In fact, he said it was such a good deal that if he wasn't my friend, he would steal it from me. And then he also lent me the money for the down payment. And then he said to me, if anything goes wrong, I'll buy it back from you. So like I kind of bought my first mobile home park with no risk. And so can anybody that's listening right now do that? Absolutely. It's the reticular activator conversation. Like one of my mentors, Dan Sullivan, says, the eyes only see and the ears only hear what the brain is looking for. I was looking for real estate deals. I had built great relationships along the way. They came alongside of me and they helped me figure out how to manage a mobile home park. So there's two parts to this, because there's mobile home park investing and then there's syndication. Mm-hmm. And I had five mobile home parks before I became a syndicator. So what I'm super proud of, I learned with my own money. I made mistakes with my own money. I got the hard knocks, because anybody that tells you, I mean, how many black eyes do you have flipping houses? I'm sure you... It looks all great on Instagram, right? Yeah, but how many times did you get your ass handed to you? I don't know if I can say ass on this podcast.
No, dude, I just cuss away. It doesn't matter to me. No, it happens all the time. Be quite honest with you. I get my ass handed to me every other month. There's always something that I'm solving a problem with. I mean, it's we ain't gonna go into my story, but it's another story for another day. Just different things happen, but you're right. So go ahead.
Yeah, so there's mobile home park investing, which we can talk about, but the thing I'm super proud of is I made my mistakes and I got a bunch of experience before I went out and started syndicating. Call it 7-8 years, well, probably 10 years of real estate investing, 7 in mobile home parks. So we can talk about, some ABCs of mobile home park investing, or we can talk about some ABCs of syndication. But I think in general, like you in the business that you do, that's your core business. Could you syndicate that? Yeah, absolutely you could. And syndication is just a way to raise more capital and bring more partners in the deal and to some degree, minimize risk too.
Right. Yeah. So let's just talk about how to form a syndication first and then how you effectively pair that with mobile home park investing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. the high level of syndication, and the one thing, you know, in any business that we get into, there's different levels of risk tolerance that different people like. And so we're kind of by the book. Technically, anytime, so I have a syndication attorney. There's attorneys that specialize in just syndication. And any syndication should be filed, generally speaking, they should be filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In order to do a syndication properly, you need to file it under some form of exemption. Because if you don't have some form of exemption, then you're technically, basically, you need to be listed on as basically like an IPO, right? So you get some form of exemption. And any good syndication attorney, there's several of them out there. So if anybody's looking for one, I can give Brandon some links, or you can find me at Investing for Freedom. I have a really good syndication attorney. His name's Mauricio Raul. That's become a really good friend of mine. He helped me understand it to begin with. And so the easy answer on the syndication is, let's just say that we've got $1 million mobile home park that we want to buy. And then we need an extra $500,000 to operate that mobile home park, bring in new homes and fix it. Because we do kind of the same thing. We buy distressed properties and then we fix them. And then we refinance them and hold them for cash flow.
Right.
So it's essentially the same thing you do. We just don't sell it. I think you keep some of yours too. But so we need to raise $1 million to buy the park. It can't get financing because it's distressed. We can't finance it. So we raise $1 million. We raise an extra $500,000 for operating costs and capital expenditures, et cetera. Here's the high level of this. The way that we do it, we go out and in this case, let's just say we issue, it's a direct deal. And we issue 15, we're going to take $100,000 minimum from each investor. And so we would go out and get 15 investors. And mm-hmm. if we're one of those investors, then we get, there's Class A shares and there's Class B shares. Mm-hmm. The Class A shares are people that come in with money. And so if I put $100,000 in too, I would get a Class A share just like the investors did. The Class B shares, and without getting too complicated on this, are basically our operating company. So we go and raise $1.5 million. We buy that park and you give some, you don't have to. You can structure your deal however you want, however your investors are comfortable with it. The way we do it, we give our investors what we call an 8% preferred return. Mm-hmm. And so, and then after the 8% preferred return, it's an 80-20 split, generally speaking. So we raised $1.5 million and let's say that that mobile home park produces $150,000 in year one. Mm-hmm. Literally all an 8% preferred return means they get an 8% return on their money. So somebody who put in $100,000 would get $8,000, right?
Right.
Okay. And for ease of math and the ease of conversation here, let's say it wasn't a $1.5 million deal. Let's say it was a $1 million deal.
Yeah.
So an 8% preferred return would be $80,000 a year, right? That went back to the investors. They get 8% on their $1 million. And then we split everything 80-20. So if that particular community or park did $100,000 of net profit in year one, $80,000, the 8% preferred return would go to the Class A shares. Mm-hmm. And then there's $20,000 of NOI left. That $20,000 of NOI gets split 80% to the Class A investors and 20% to us.
Right.
So the investors would get the $80,000 and then they would get 80% of the other $20,000, right?
Yeah.
So basically they get 16,000 on of the 20 and we would get 4. So the investors got 96,000 and we got 4,000. Well, how the heck do you make money? People are probably sitting here saying, well, why the heck would I want to syndicate anything? We have a property management company that gets paid 6% for property management. We get a 2% asset management fee on all assets that we manage. We get an acquisition fee. So every time we buy $1 million property, we get a 2% acquisition fee. So there's fees in there. And then by the way, the 80-20 split, this is where it gets beautiful. So when we turn a property around and we refinance that and we give the investors their original capital back. So let's just say it was $1 million in this case. Now everything is split 50-50. Mm-hmm. So the operator is incentivized to get the property turned around in a quick manner, get it stabilized, refinance, give the investor their money back. And now the investors keep their ownership in that property going forward. We just split everything 50-50. That's the high level of syndication. And by the way, the splits are not, they're not set in stone. Mm-hmm. You need to write a private placement memorandum and you need to build an executive summary for every deal or every fund that you do. And again, you need to see an attorney to get this stuff done. Yeah. You don't want to skimp here. This isn't a these are not legal Zoom, start your own LLC kind of thing. When you decide you want to put on your big boy real estate investor pants, you need to have a good syndication attorney because you will get yourself in trouble if you don't. Mm-hmm. But the beauty in this is, and so the thing that I was saying is the splits are not set.
Yeah.
If you've got investors that will do 50-50 from the get-go, great, that's fine. But most investors are programmed to do some kind of preferred return. I have a feeling that after, you know, I know everything's evergreen, but we're in May of 2020. And so after this whole COVID thing, I think the preferred returns, we're going to start seeing those drop from, you know, you'll probably start seeing some 7 prefs and 6 prefs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you can structure that however you want. Just like any other partnership, whatever the investors will do, as long as it's written into your PPM a certain way and you don't change that, you can structure it however you want.
All right, guys, this sponsor is REI Society itself. REISociety.com mastermind is where I want you to go as soon as we get done with this episode. Or go ahead and book the link right now on your phone or laptop, wherever you're listening to this. This is where I'm doing a 30-day real estate investment virtual bootcamp mastermind. It combines the exact strategies I've used to triple my income and design my real estate career. It's a virtual mastermind about creating clarity, taking massive action, and getting tangible results. There's no travel required. You can do everything from the comfort of your smartphone or laptop. What I do need from you is full engagement towards the realizations of your goals. You're going to learn about wholesaling, flipping, rentals, and short-term rentals. Basically, creating an income from thin air while never utilizing your own money. Learn how to, you know, determine values correctly, work with contractors without getting hurt, design a home quickly and to sell a property quickly like a pro. Learn how to use the Burr method and build a long-lasting portfolio so that you can have passive income and create long-lasting wealth. And then how to build a multi-million dollar portfolio and how to become a 5-star super host quickly in short-term rentals if you're interested in that side of the game. We'll help you set up your office, your digital office, set up marketing so you can get more leads, acquisitions, finance, construction, management, liquidations, and you also get a 30-day mentorship by yours truly and my wife, Tiffany, in a closed Facebook group. You're going to get all my documents, all my lenders, everything. Go to reisociety.com/mastermind right now and sign up today. And right now, because of these unprecedented times, we're giving a 20% discount on our cost of the classes. Thank you.
This is probably the best teaching I've heard. And I'm not just fluffing you. If you want some fluff, I always say go pet a bunny. I heard that from somewhere a few years ago. But this is probably the best teaching I've heard on simplifying a syndication. So let me ask you this. Let's pair this with mobile home park investing. If you are syndicating this kind of property, what kind of property are you looking at or looking for, in better words? What kind of property are you looking for? You said earlier you're looking for distressed properties like I am, I guess somewhat on a larger, or definitely on a larger scale. But how do you find them and what are you looking for?
So the interesting thing, before we get into that, let me come back to the syndication part.
Sure.
Because whatever the fund is or whatever your group of investors need, that's going to determine what type of properties you're looking for, right? Okay. And so here's the, you know this as well as I do. The big IRRs, the internal rates of return, are in distressed properties, right? This is the same thing as your business. Why aren't you buying? And I heard you share the lipstick on a pig thing, right? Where you can just kind of go and those, you like those because those are, that takes a little bit of work, right? And you still get to make some money. But yeah, why aren't you buying? I'm totally out of my league, so I might say something stupid here. But why aren't you buying like very nice properties and trying to flip them?
There's no money.
There's no money.
Right.
Yeah. So there are funds out there that, there are certain types of investors. By the way, in this business, if you're an investor in a syndication, you get the real estate tax benefits because you're a partner in that syndication. And so there are some funds out there that the whole thesis or the mandate of the fund is cash flow. And they're just literally looking for 3-5% cash flow per year. And they want the tax benefits. And so those are the guys that are out raising capital and they're buying the Class A mobile home parks, right? And so all of this comes back to what your core thesis is. And so like we have a certain fund, it's a distressed asset fund. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for higher IRRs. And so in that particular fund, we're buying distressed properties. And so let's say it's a 100 space property. And I think most people, if they haven't already seen a mobile home park like this, they're going to start seeing them now because we're talking about it. So you see a mobile home park and you're driving through it and all you see is these concrete pads, right? There's no homes there. Or like every third pad is a home, but then there's two empty. So it's like, it's one third occupied. We like parks that are between 40 and 60% occupied because we can get good deals on them. We have a construction company. We can bring in new homes. We can remodel homes. I've got a construction crew that travels. This is kind of how our model worked. And so we can go in and buy these properties that nobody else wants or not as many people want. Mm-hmm. And so they're not cash flowing. This is the problem. They're not going to cash flow from day one. That's one challenge. Number two, they're hard to get financing on because no bank, number one, likes to own mobile homes. They're okay with mobile home parks, a lot of them, but they don't want to own the mobile homes.
Right.
But then they don't want to lend on communities that are, you know, 40, 50% occupied. So the challenge is we have to come in all cash. And so they're very cash intense out the gate and there's no cash flow for a little bit. And so the reason why I'm saying this, it all depends on your fund mix. And so what we've looked at in that fund, we want to try to identify like 70% of properties that are distressed and in turnaround mode. And then we try to find one or two deals a year to put into that fund that are cash flowing. Because then that kind of offsets. So those one or two deals, they're never going to be home runs. They might barely get to 8%. They might be at 7.5 on year one. And then maybe on year two, once they're stabilized, we get to 8.5, 9%. That's not a home run.
Right.
But if we can offset one of those with six or seven of these, there's some cash flow coming in. And then once these turn and the IRRs start coming up, then it doesn't matter, right? And so to answer your question, it's all about the group. And we actually have four different general partnerships. My partner and I have our own fund. And then we have three different general partnerships that target different types of asset classes. Not asset classes, but different like B's and C's. So different levels of occupancy and different levels of stabilized. So we got one group that's more interested in cash flow, but they're not as concerned about the 20% IRRs. They're fine with a 12% IRR. They just want the cash flow. So you got to kind of figure out, you know, who's in your circle? What do you really think you want your returns to look like? And then that's going to determine what kind of asset you go after.
Man, all right. So this is good, really meaty content. A funny story, and I'll tie this to what we're talking about is, I've been in real estate for some time now, almost as long as you have. For me, it's been 17 years, and I didn't study the competitors. I never heard of Bigger Pockets until last year. Mm. I just found out about GoBundance from you. I never jumped into masterminds, never got around highly intellectual people that's involved in real estate, and then I started listening to these podcasts in the last year. I started to interviewing people and things like this. And, you know, I was kind of about 2 years ago, I felt like I was at the top of my game. And I realized after we dissolved my former partnership with my business partner that I didn't know what the hell I was doing after all those years in the game. So I made good money. We built up a pretty reputable business. And then I started reading real estate books. I started finding out who Bigger Pockets was, who these different guys are that teach on real estate. And I'm like, man, I got so much more to learn. So first and foremost, like I said, again, this is really good meaty content. And it's just, I didn't know much about this, to be honest with you. So you've kind of simplified the myths and debunked them for somebody like me. And that's kind of what I appreciate for you, about you. You kind of like, this is kind of like my life's mission, which is inspire, educate, and to give people hope. And I feel like you do that with your podcast. And then, man, you just are just coming out here firing, just, I don't know, this sounds stupid, but firing missiles. But just go shooting them off. Like, this is man, dude, thank you. Like, this is great. I don't know. So I know that was a long thing trying to tie that back in. Let me ask you a couple more questions before we start wrapping this up. But I think you deal with only accredited investors. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. How many employees do you have right now?
Right now, post-COVID or pre-COVID?
Pre-COVID.
We were about 75 employees.
Okay. So you are the operations gentleman. How many hours a week are you in the office and how many hours a week do you oversee your business?
Let me, just to set the stage and be fair to our listeners here. So I've got a right-hand guy who's worked with me for a long time in multiple different businesses. We're amazing friends. So that debunks number one, that you can't work with your friends. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but as long as everybody knows their place. And so I've got an amazing guy. His name's Tyler. We've worked in different businesses before. We've been friends for a long time. So he really oversees my operations team at this point in time. I brought him on probably mid last year after trying to convince him to come to work with me again for a long time.
Yeah.
And this guy owns his own mobile home parks and he owns insurance companies that run on their own. So the key to all of this, and then I'll answer your question, the key to all of this is leveraging other people's time and talents.
Okay. But you did good video about that, not to interrupt, but you did a good video about that. I saw it recently on Instagram, IGTV. That was, we'll try to link that video into and your Instagram account into this podcast. But you taught on that really well, by the way.
Thank you. So to answer your question, I'm in the office probably 5 hours a week. Nobody's at the office right now, but I'm in the office probably 5 hours a week. You know, we're on the EOS process. I communicate a lot with my controller, my partner, and Tyler. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, almost all the other employees are kind of under Tyler's watch. And, you know, he's got some different levels of management, et cetera, there. But I spend the majority of my time with three other people, my controller, my operations director, and my partner. So I'm in the office about 5 hours. That doesn't mean that we're not on phone calls. We're not, you know, working with acquisitions and refinances and all that stuff. But, you know, and then from a work level, you know, as well as I do, I mean, you don't have 9 to 5 hours, but right. You know, I'm pretty flexible. Before all this COVID thing happened, I went to Hawaii literally the week we got back, we got locked down. But, you know, the whole time I'm in Hawaii, I just tell my team, I'm like, I'm not available. And things go on. And so that you've got to be intentional about that. That's the point that I'm saying here. You're in one of two camps. You're either in the camp that you're not willing to invest the time, energy, and you've got too much ego. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be working 70 hours a week, or you're in the other camp of building a team is more important than anything and having the right people around you. So again, I'm huge on leveraging time, talent. And I put my father-in-law says this all the time, like I put my pants on the same way anybody else does. And so even when you said like, I'm dropping missiles here. Well, 4 years ago, I didn't know anything about syndication. It's 2020 and I got into, I literally, the first syndication event that I went to was January of 2016. No, I'm lying. It's January of 2015.
Yeah.
So, you know, 5 years ago, I barely knew what the term was. And so anybody can do anything they want. None of us are special.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, I think that's a perfect place to fold into or unravel into some pop culture questions. I don't know if you've heard my podcast, but I always throw this in to humanize people. Because to a lot of people that are just beginning, and that's kind of the audience I have for whatever reason, they're like, man, these guys are super intelligent. They know what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I can ever do it. So that's why I've changed the podcast around. But the pop culture questions, I obviously grew up as a byproduct of the 80s and the 90s. Love movies. I love music. I definitely love books, which I don't know if that qualifies for pop culture, but I got three questions. First one, what is your... Yeah. Let's go with the easy one. What is your favorite book and why?
The Richest Man in Babylon. And the reason why... Can I tell you a quick story about it?
Sure, absolutely.
So my wife and I... Again, I was 20, she was 19. I have an uncle who's super successful and I didn't realize growing up that he was super successful. Although he had a motorhome and a huge ocean boat that I would see him once a year driving to the ocean. Mm-hmm. But he was an auctioneer, cattle rancher from Nebraska, super successful. had a real estate company, all kinds of stuff. And then Kara's uncle was also an auctioneer and a cattle guy and owned a feedlot and all this stuff. And so Kara's uncle lived in South Dakota. My uncle lived in Nebraska. So we're in Elko, Nevada. Kara and I are getting married. My wife and I are getting married. And I walk into the foyer of the church and I see my uncle hugging Kara's uncle. And these guys are from the Midwest and they've known each other forever. And so number one, it's a small world when you really start, you know, intertwining and networking and building these relationships. But my uncle for our wedding gave us the richest man in Babylon. And he wrote inside of it, he said, the $20 bill is for you to spend and the $2 bill is for yourself. And I won't go into what that really means, but I didn't pick that, pick that book up for probably 2 years. And since I picked that book up, so I was 22, it changed my life. And I've probably read that book between reading and audio 150 times easily. It's not a huge read, but it just teaches money principle, money mindset over and over and over. And it's in parable story form format. So changed my life.
It's such a great book. Thank you for that. What is your favorite movie or documentary and why?
Top Gun, hands down.
Oh man.
I know. I think because there's love. I mean, I just remember the scene at the end when the jukebox, you know, they drop the coin and there's love, there's action. I can't wait for the new Top Gun to come out.
And it looks great. I hope the movie theaters open up so we can actually watch it in a movie theater instead of direct to digital cinema or whatever they call it nowadays. All right. So I've got a specific way I'm going to word this last one. I haven't worded it like this yet. So you're the first one to technically answer it this way. What is your guilty pleasure music or song when you just have to let go?
Flute Song by Russ.
Flute Song by Russ. I have no idea what that is. I'll have to look it up. Or maybe I do. I don't know.
That and then the one previous to that was Billionaire. Now it's Flute Song by Russ. But, you know, I do whatever I want, whenever I want.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'll make sure I remember what that is. It sounds familiar. I'll see. All right. Well, do you have anything you want to promote or anything that you're looking to accomplish here in the next few weeks as we are moving forward along and in this coronavirus economy? Anything you want to just let go and tell the audience about?
You know, the Investing for Freedom podcast is kind of where I'm putting a lot of my energy. And to be honest with you, I'm not really monetizing that in any way, shape, or form. It's just where I share my passion about life. I'm, you know, back to that mentor of mine that said, you know, we owe it to that next generation. And he literally started an apprenticeship program where people could learn plumbing and heating.
Yeah.
They got paid to work and they went to school for free. And so like, just the podcast itself. And then, I've launched the Investing for Freedom Facebook community where we're just going to be bringing in experts for free, just going live. People can put their hands up and just share information. So yeah, that's about it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Mike, I greatly appreciate you taking your time here with the audience. And I just want to say thank you again for the 15th time, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
See what you're doing too. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. And well, thank you.